Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larson, Judge Wheelock, Judge Smith, the Honorable Elise L. Larson presiding.
Morning, counsel. You may be seated. Good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. For the audio record, today is October 31st, 2024. Today's argument is being live streamed, and we are also making an audio record. The audio record of today's hearing will be available on the court's website within 24 hours. As a reminder to the three people here, so there are no other recordings without the express permission of the Court of Appeals. With that, I will call our first case of the day, case number A240442, Jill, is it Kalish?
Kalish.
Versus Jason Erickson et al. Good morning to counsel. As I'm sure you are both aware, you will each be given 15 minutes for argument. Appellants, you will, of course, have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before beginning your argument, please feel free. There's a button in the center to adjust the podium to your comfort. And if you would please identify yourselves and your client for the audio record before you begin, it would be much appreciated. And with that, yes. It just takes a little while, so I feel like it's good to. You may begin when you're ready.
Good morning, judges, counsel, people in the gallery. My name is Terry Benson, and I represent the defendants in this matter, Jason Erickson and JAO Enterprises. This case arises out of a motor vehicle accident that occurred in 2021. The case went to trial last summer, and during that trial, the jury determined fault at 50% each for each party. So the verdict was divided down the middle based on the party's proportional fault. The issue that arose during the trial was the expert testimony and whether it was sufficient for the question of future medical treatment to go to the jury. We argued during trial before the matter went to the jury that it should we should have been given a directed verdict or on that particular issue. Then we raised that issue again in the post-trial motions. The issue for us is the testimony.
Excuse me. If I remember right, in your argument is that there wasn't sufficient foundation for the opinion. Is that accurate?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because you didn't feel that it asked the appropriate question about medical certainty. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Now, my question is, in the questioning, I believe the respondent asked the doctor if all their opinions were to a reasonable degree of medical certainty. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So when he gave his opinion about future medical, do you concede that those opinions were to a reasonable degree of medical certainty?
I agree, Your Honor, that he made whatever statements he made to a reasonable degree of medical certainty. Our issue is that he did not make a statement as to the essentials, the gatekeeping issue of, number one, whether there was going to be more likely than not, to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, the need for future medical care. He did not make that statement. And then the follow-up questions that have to also be answered in order to get to a jury are the frequency, duration, and cost of that. He was asked repeatedly by counsel, and he refused to go there. And that was the issue for us. The actual language, when he was asked the question, if you might permit me, Your Honor, all right, doctor, were you able to form an opinion or do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to what future medical treatment Ms. Kalish may require for these injuries? I'm hoping she's not going to require much. I think the majority of her symptoms have been treated. She's a tough patient in terms. At times things are sore, but looking back, when we go back talking about things and seeing her and just getting a general feel about them as much as then you watch her functioning. She's improving, and she is. So I don't think she's going to need much of future care except for maybe an occasional therapy to kind of get her back in line and get her feeling better for some of the pains or discomforts that she might have. But in general, she's making good progress in a variety of treatments, and she won't need a ton. The judge in this case took the statement that she might need treatment in the future, or that I don't think she's going to require much, to say that as a statement that she will need future medical care, and it has to be more likely than not. That should have either been followed up by counsel with a question, is that more likely than not that she will require future medical care? Because that is the threshold issue. All the other things flow from that. And with the doctor being—
But why under the Dornberg case doesn't that go to weight, that the jury got to weigh whether or not the, you know, uses of words like maybe or possibly was sufficient? Why is that a legal issue as opposed to going to the weight of the evidence?
Because the issue, Your Honor, of whether it goes to a jury, whether there is enough information for them to make a decision based on the facts of the case and with the assistance of expert testimony, as opposed to them going in the back and all sitting around saying, well, maybe she needs something, maybe she doesn't.
But in Dornberg, wasn't it that the expert said that they'd formed the opinion that she would need surgery, but no one could tell positively that it would definitely be necessary? How is this case different from Dornberg?
Because in Dornberg, they did make a determination that there would definitely be future surgery. In this case, there's no future surgery. In fact, there was no surgery recommended by this doctor. And the issue comes up, if you can imagine, in—
But didn't the doctor, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, didn't the expert in that case also say that you couldn't predict the future? It's not— the quote I have is, no one could tell positively that a future fusion would definitely be necessary.
But
the Supreme Court said that equivocation went to weight as opposed to.
But in that case, they did say that it was more likely than not that they would need surgery. They just couldn't tell for certain. They can't always— no doctor is ever going to say in almost 40 years of practice 100%, unless the person, you know, unless they're certain. They want to be truthful with you. This doctor was equivocating the entire time during that questioning. If we get to that issue, if we say whether it should have gone to the jury or not, then I think we still have to ask, did the doctor say at some point that this surgery, that any future care was necessary? He kept saying, I don't know, maybe, it's possible, I don't think much. And he was unwilling to go down that path, even though he was asked to review his report. He didn't. He said, yeah, there's nothing there. I mean, he did not go there. And I think the problem is, if you imagine once it gets to the jury, then in an ordinary case where somebody, let's say they go for chiropractic treatment, you get a whole lot of chiropractic treatment at the front end, and then you're a couple of years down the road. And if the jury hears it and then they're allowed to extrapolate from the treatment that you had back when you were originally injured, we're talking about extrapolating a lot of treatment. And that's what happened in this case. Once it went to the jury, they were allowed to go forward and say, well, she had all of this PT after these surgeries, and that PT related to the surgery. And so we can extrapolate all that out. It was like, you know, $60,000, I think. You know,
well, I mean, but if you, it was $50,000, but if you extrapolate that over the course of her life, I mean, doesn't this really go to— I mean, it's like $1,200 a year. And so as I understand respondent's argument is that the cost of what a average therapy appointment cost was in the record, the length of her life was in the record, and from that evidence, the district court or the jury said, well, about $1,200 a year seems reasonable because that would cover one or two therapies a year.
And that's the problem, is that we're talking about therapies that were related to a surgery. There's no evidence in the record that she needed future therapy to maintain her condition. The judge went and made a statement that I do disagree with. The judge, the cases that he relied upon, in each one of them, the the doctor had said there was a need for future care, but was unclear about the certainty or the amount or when it was going to occur. In this case, he was unwilling to say for certain, or even more likely than not, maybe she might need future treatment. And again, the problem is, you're absolutely right, Judge. There is something in the record that shows a lot of therapy done at the time that there are surgeries, and that therapy related to those surgeries. And so for a jury to go in and say, well, we've been told by counsel, which is who told them, how much it should be, and he said that'll only be $1,200 a year. Well, that seems really reasonable. But are you going to really need that treatment? Is the doctor saying, should that have gone to them? Because I'm not saying that those numbers are irrational. I'm not saying that no juror could have found that an amount of $50,000 over an entire lifetime would be unreasonable. What I'm saying is there's no medical foundation for it. And the problem is there's a great unfairness in it because of the information that they're given. True, that is therapy she had, but it doesn't mean that that's therapy she's going to need in the future.
I want to take you back to the language that you quoted,
yes,
from the transcript. And as you know, as we look at that, I guess it doesn't seem to me that the doctor testified that there wasn't going to be a need in the future. He just said, I just don't know how much. You know, she's making good progress in a variety of treatments, and hopefully she won't need a ton. That doesn't say she won't need anything. There's a couple other places in there where, with regard to what the testimony was, you know, it wasn't, she's not going to need anything. It was, we just don't know how much.
I would beg to differ. If you read the transcript, I believe, Your Honor, very respectfully, I think what he was saying is, I don't know. He's not saying, yes, she's going to need future treatment, but I just don't know how much. He's saying, I don't know. Things are going along. There's no statement of unequivocated, either more likely than not, she is going to need treatment in the future. And again, then once it gets to the jury, we're talking about extrapolating occupational therapy and physical therapy that relates specifically to the treatment that she had, the surgery she had, and not just general therapies that she would need, and those are related to the surgery. I did want to point out right now one of the things that was an issue for me. The judge wrote in there, and he quoted from a place, actually counsel did, talking about how the judge did talk, or the medical expert did talk about occupational therapy, and it's out of context. In the statement about occupational therapy was not made in any relation to whether she needed future occupational therapy. He was explaining why she underwent occupational therapy after the surgery. So to place it into the context of the discussion about whether she needed future medical care, it just didn't appear there. This was, was this reasonable and necessary treatment she had? Yes, I gave her, ordered her to have occupational therapy. I think that's important because our judge below said, well, he said that occupational therapy would help her with future surgeries. He didn't say she needed future surgeries.
Excuse me, were these issues argued to the jury?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Okay, and the jury believed that.
Right, but Your Honor, that's why this is a threshold question, sir. That's why a jury can't decide. I can tell you, I have never sat on a jury panel, but I've had family members sit in a jury panel. There's a wide range of people in there. They are not qualified to talk about how much, right? Is there a statement that more likely than not this person is going to need
you
treatment?
You need that exact language, more likely than
yes,
not?
Yes, that's actually the language, sir. I'll give you the language. I'll do it during the break and I'll come back up with it. I had it out here. It's more likely than not. That is the actual language. And so once it gets back to the jury, what have they got to go on? All these bills that she had before? Yes, that's what they can do. I'm not saying that that's an unreasonable choice by the jury. Once it goes to them, once they are allowed to consider past medical treatment, they're not qualified and neither am I, but I've been a lawyer for 40 years. So I say, well, yeah, but that was all back when she had the surgery. What does that mean? Like 10 years from now, I have my hip replaced back in 2009. Don't have any therapy. If you looked at my medical bills back then and the doctor said, well, maybe she might need some more therapy in the future, you'd say, wow, she had her hip replaced. It was all this money. Then there's all these physical therapy appointments she went to. We'll just extrapolate those out until she dies. That's the problem. And that's why that issue is the threshold question. Was there a statement of more likely than not? And in this case, there was not. You look like you have a question.
Well, I'm thinking if a person then, in your case where you had somebody who did have to have a second knee replacement or something, then how is that? I mean, it seems like the jury is making some determination based on some element of reasonableness.
But again, I and it's really, you just have to look at it and maybe even listen to the tape. This is not a statement like Ms. Kalish is going to need future treatments, more likely than not that she will in the future. Maybe, I mean, I really think she will. He was like, she seems fine. Basically, if you're out of the room, if you look at her and you talk to her, she stops complaining. But if you're not looking at her and talking to her, she says there's something wrong with her. I mean, that's kind of what that whole paragraph was in the context and in the entire oral art, deposition that he took. So I think he's saying maybe she'll need future treatment, but we should have had a statement. Well, what future treatment would that be? I mean, is it
didn't he say that except she's maybe going to need occupational therapy to get her back in line and to get her back feeling better for some of the pains or discomfort that she might have?
No, she did not. He did not. He said that is exactly the problem that I have. He said that in the context of discussing whether it was reasonable and necessary for the medical expense of the physical therapy that he ordered for Ms. Kalish following the surgeries. That's the statement
that you contest was appropriate to use.
That statement was made in that situation. I think it was not related and not raised during the discussion about future medical care. He did not say she will need future medical occupational therapy. That was was this reasonable and necessary? Here is this bill. And yes, I ordered physical therapy because after she had the surgeries, it was appropriate. That's where that came.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
And could you tell me again what case it was you wanted me to check? Dornberg? No, it was, I was going to, never mind.
Counsel for respondents.
Good morning, members of the court. My name is Michael Dougherty, and I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff and respondent, Jill Kalish. Members of the court, expert testimony using language similar to that used by Dr. Bacher in this case has been held by this court and by the Minnesota Supreme Court to be sufficient to support an award of future medical expenses. Language like once in a while, maybe, in the Lind case, and testimony that fusion surgery might be necessary in the future in the Dornberg case has been held sufficient. I do think it's important that the court take the expert's testimony as a whole. Ms. Benson made the argument that some of the language at issue, some of the testimony at issue was given in response to a question about surgery. The fact is that the jury heard all of Dr. Bacher's testimony, and he did talk at various points about the fact that she'd had occupational therapy and that it had been helpful. And so when he says later in his testimony, in the language that's at issue here, I don't think she's going to need much of future cares except for maybe an occasional therapy. I think it was clear to the jury that he was talking about occupational therapy, and I don't think it really matters what type of therapy. He's talked about therapy and said she might need some occasionally in the future.
How is that the same? I take your point, but how do you respond to appellant's argument that in cases like Lind and Dornberg, the expert did seem to say more clearly than perhaps the testimony came in here that it's highly likely that, right? Obviously, you would have a better record, right? If Dr. Bakker had said, or Bakken had said, it's more likely than not she'll need occupational therapy in the future. Why under Lind and Dornberg wasn't a statement more clearly like that appropriate to get past that threshold question?
No record is perfect, Your Honor, but I think with all due respect, I think that counsel maybe overstated a little bit how clear the record was in Lind and Dornberg. I think if you look at the language in those cases that's quoted, the language in Lind was, I think she will probably seek medical attention once in a while, maybe over the years, on the average of once every 4 or 5 years. That, I think, is very similar to Dr. Bakker's testimony here. In Dornberg, the court said that the expert testified that while no one could tell positively that a future fusion would definitely be necessary, it was his opinion that the additional injury definitely increased the possibility that a fusion might be necessary in the future. The fact that he expressed the opinion that such surgery might be necessary would go to the weight. That's getting out of the actual language of the expert there. But as paraphrased by the court, he said, no one could tell positively that a future fusion would definitely be necessary. It was his opinion the additional injury definitely increased the possibility that a fusion might be necessary. The court held that was sufficient. And the case law is very clear, Your Honor, that no specific language is required. There is no requirement that experts use the phrase more likely than not. More likely than not is the standard of proof, obviously, in a civil case. The expert has to show that it's more likely than not that there's a reasonable certainty of future medical expenses. But language similar to what Dr. Bakker used has been upheld by this court as sufficient to meet go to the jury.
Well, you would agree that it has to be beyond based on reasonable medical certainty, though, right?
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. Yes, and the questions were phrased that way to Dr. Bakker. And multiple times throughout the examination and at least one point and maybe two, he was specifically asked to confirm that he would give all his opinion testimony to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, and he agreed he would. And the specific question about future medical was phrased in terms of future medical certainty. It was, question, this is on page 49 of the transcript. Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to whether the injuries you've described as resulting from the May 5th, 2021 auto accident are permanent injuries? And he gave that answer. And then, do you have an opinion? He said they were permanent. I'm sorry, that was the wrong page. Okay, all right, doctor, were you able to form an opinion or do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to what future medical treatment Ms. Kalish may require for these injuries? And that's where he gives the answer that we've all heard multiple times now. I'm hoping she's not going to require much. I think the majority of her symptoms have been treated and so on. I'll skip ahead a little bit. I don't think she's going to need much of future cares except for maybe an occasional therapy. It was clearly stated. The questions were clearly stated in terms of reasonable medical certainty, and he gave his answers in those terms.
So it's your position that the statement, a few more treatments or something is...
Yeah, except for maybe an occasional therapy, I think was the...
And you think that's sufficient?
I think it is, Your Honor. I think that the case law is clear, and the court has said, the Minnesota Supreme Court has said, that it need not be unequivocal. The testimony supporting future damages need not be unequivocal. And again, the word maybe was in the testimony that was quoted in the Lind case. The Dornberg case talked about possibility that a fusion might be necessary in the future. So those are... This kind of language it's not absolute certainty, but that's not what's required. And I think that in the context of the doctor's overall testimony, this was clearly sufficient, excuse me, clearly sufficient to meet the standard of reasonable certainty. He didn't use those words, but he answered a question that used those words, and he gave the answer that he gave that I think is very similar to the answers in Dornberg and Lind. just to be clear again, and I think it's important to look at the actual testimony and not counsel's characterization of it. Dr. Bakker never said there's nothing there. He never said that the therapies that he was talking about would be related to a future surgery. He talked about therapy, you know, occasional therapy to get her back in line when her symptoms acted up. It was not counsel who told the jury it would be $1,200 a year. That was probably in my closing argument, but that was in the bills. The jury was presented with voluminous medical records and medical bills that showed the costs of that therapy, and they took that back to the jury room with them. So I think we can assume that they're
why didn't it require expert testimony to explain what a future cost of therapy might look like? Why was this an appropriate way to present the evidence? Because I think that you would agree with appellant that the doctor didn't get into the average cost of one of my appointments is this amount of money. So we would guess that it would cost about this much a year if she was having one therapy appointment. Like, why was this the appropriate way to present that?
Well, Your Honor, that's the Quapian case, which we've cited in our brief, gives the roadmap for determining what the cost will be. First of all, Quapian has three requirements. One is that there must be expert testimony as to the permanency of the plaintiff's condition. There was, and we've cited that in our brief. There must be evidence as to the cost of similar past treatments. And that's what I was referring to with the bills and so on. And there was testimony, it's not quoted in the briefs, but it's in the transcript. Near the end of his testimony, I asked Dr. Bakker a series of questions going over the bills, saying, look at this bill, both from his own clinic, Twin Cities Orthopedics, and from other providers, saying, was this amount an amount that is reasonable and consistent with what's charged in this community or in this market? The exact language is in the transcript, but he basically said all of the costs that were incurred previously were reasonable and necessary. And so, and the final factor in Quapian is evidence of the plaintiff's life expectancy, and that was given to the jury in the standard instructions. The jury was told she had 41 more years of anticipated life expectancy. So I think we've met the Quapian standards. Quapian doesn't say you need to expressly testify that it will be X amount per year. The jury is allowed to extrapolate that from permanency, cost of similar prior treatments, and life expectancy. And that's what the jury did here. I think it's clear that was consistent with the cost of prior past treatments. The $50,000, as the court indicated earlier, comes out to about $1,200 a year, and that's consistent with what she had paid in the past. I should just note quickly that the appellant attempts to distinguish Quapian in her brief. There's a quote in appellant's brief where it says, first, the Quapian court established that plaintiff would most certainly require future care. Most certainly is not the standard. The standard is reasonable certainty by a preponderance of the evidence, and we've met that. And in Quapian, the physician did testify that the patient would need physical therapy or similar treatment to relieve her pain for the rest of her life. So Dr. Bakker's testimony was sufficient, I believe, to take this issue to the jury. Dornberg said, the court in Dornberg said that it's not a matter of excuse me for 1 second. Try to find the quote here. The language used by the expert goes to the weight of the evidence. It does not. It should not take away the jury's right to hear the evidence and to consider the evidence of future medicals. And I think that's what we're dealing with here, is that we have expert testimony, which is never perfect, but it was sufficient here. The fact that his testimony suggested less than absolute certainty goes to the weight of his opinion, but shouldn't deprive the jury of the right to hear it. That's Dornberg. The district court made the right decision here, and we respectfully request that the district court be affirmed.
Counsel, do you agree that under the applicable standard of review that we're looking at this de novo and we're making a decision about whether that reasonable certainty requirement was met?
I do agree that it's a de novo standard of review, Your Honor. And that also means, of course, that this court must apply the standard that the trial court was required to apply, which is reasonable medical certainty demonstrated by a preponderance of the evidence, more likely than not.
Thank you.
If the court has no more questions, I'll end a little early.
I see no other questions. Right. Thank you, counsel. Thank
you. Okay. So it is out of the Kwapian case, the statement about the jury then is not permitted to award any amount about expenses that have to be more likely to occur before an instruction on its future loss of earning capacity is given. The plaintiff must prove the reasonable certainty of future damages by a fair preponderance of the evidence. So that would be the standard that is in the Kwapian case. And again, that's a case about future expenses. I do need the court to hear me out on this. In both the Lind case and the Dornberg case, Lind, they said it was permanent and she would require future treatment. He's not quite sure. Every 4 to 5 years, that's another statement about certainty. And then in the Dornberg case, said that it said that it was likely within the next 15 years she would require additional surgery. So both of the experts in those cases made much broader, more definite statements. And because counsel keeps asking you to refer to Dr. Bockert's testimony, I will refer the court to the expert's testimony. It appears on page 52. Doctor, again, feel free to refer to your report if it will refresh your recollection. But do you have an opinion to the reasonable degree of medical certainty whether Ms. Kalish suffered any past disability, post-accident disability, or future as a result of the accident, short-term, not permanent? From what we gather and from the imaging, so there's a period where she's obviously recovering from her injuries. That can take a while and she'll be unable to function, but once she's healed at this point, we don't expect any long-term disability. So he was not projecting into the future the way that the expert in Lind and the expert in Dorn.
But isn't there a distinction between saying that this is a long-term issue or this is a permanent issue versus this is something that's going to need more treatment, but it's not necessarily one of those, falls into one of those other two categories? I mean, isn't there some space for treatment in that area?
I think that there is, Your Honor. I think you're right. But this case, each one of these cases falls on the language that came from the doctor's testimony. So when we're talking about whether there's going to be need for future testimony, you have to decide whether what this doctor said was enough to get over that threshold. Again, threshold because a jury is not qualified to determine what future therapies. If we're going to look at what Dr. Dorn, but what Dr. Bakken said, Dr. Bakken's like, I don't see this as permanent. Yes, the scarring is permanent, And yes, she has metal in her. That's permanent. But we don't have that same flavor that we had with Lind and with Dornberg and with Kwapien. And I think the problem is, again, what are they extrapolating from? They can only extrapolate from the medical treatment that you received immediately post-surgery, not, you know, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road. They're not qualified to do that. And that's why, as a secondary part of that, you have to do the fact that it is more likely than not to occur. That gets you somewhere. Then you have to have the next one, which is what is the frequency, duration, and cost. And I do agree with counsel. I think there's no problem at all from a jury having in the record medical bills that if they were given guidance as to how long this was going to go on or which of these therapies would you want, and to just sort of say, well, we've sort of done this with our thumb and said, well, we're going to go through all these and we're going to say $1,200 a year for life. That doesn't follow with his statement.
So
that
you're saying this would be, your issue is not with the evidence that came in. Your issue is that there wasn't a question like, how many, on average, how many times a year do you think she would need occupational therapy? And if the expert had said, oh, she'll probably need on average one occupational therapy session a year, that then there would have been enough evidence in the record to support?
There are two issues there, Judge. Your Honor, the first one is whether the jury should have gotten it at all. Whether the doctor...
Yeah, well, I'm assuming the jury should have gotten it. And my question is, with regard to your argument about evidence on the cost issue, is it based on the evidence that was in the record as, like, is your problem with the fact that there wasn't enough evidence presented with regard to what the cost of these therapies would be, or is your argument that the expert didn't tie the loop by saying, she's not going to need much, you know, maybe once a year, if he had testified that to that, then would you not have an issue with regard to the cost calculation?
Okay. So first, again, if you have already determined.
We're just assuming, okay. Oh, we're assuming for the point of my question.
Okay. For the point of your question, yes. Then, if there had been any other guidance about what kind of treatment, the therapies that she underwent were therapies specific for the surgeries, the wrist surgery, right? And then I think was a shoulder, you know, the surgeries specific to those. If there had been a statement, you know, and into the future, I think she's going to end up needing, you know, some chiropractic treatment or this or that, and much more definite into the future, so we knew what it was. I don't disagree with Kwapien, and I don't disagree with counsel, that in the record there was evidence of what treatment she had had, but that's the problem that the appellant has with this whole process, that a jury gets to decide based on irrelevant medical bills, because irrelevant only into the future, 10 years down the road, because they are surgeries that were specifically, those were treatments and therapies that were specifically designed to help someone who had just finished surgery. And it shouldn't have gotten to the jury because I think there wasn't enough evidence that she needed future medical care. And so with that, I will step down. I do want to say thank you so much. This is, I'm certain, going to be my last appearance here. I'm going to be retiring. And
congratulations.
It's been wonderful. I was going to dress up for you today. I was going to wear a Halloween costume, which I will explain later. But it was raining so hard. And I thought, you know, you'd all know that black wig wasn't really my hair. So. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments today. This case has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion in the time prescribed by statute.